Hello, Low Country. This is longtime ESPN commentator Dr. Jerry Punch, inviting you to listen to the Scott Hamilton Show every day right here on 98.9 ESPN Charleston. Because as everyone knows, Scott is a legend in his own mind.
Welcome back. Rivalry weekend. I have a hard time saying that word. Rivalry weekend.
It is a tough word. Rivalry.
Immunized. Thank you, Aaron Rodgers, for making me say that. Let's talk a little football. Joining us now on the Say Tama Hotline is national college football writer for the Orlando Sentinel, Matt Mercial. A belated happy Thanksgiving, sir.
How are you guys doing today? Happy Thanksgiving to you.
I am well, Matt, and got a quick question for you. I'm seeing more smoke around the name Billy Napier for the Florida job. What you're thinking?
Yeah, you know, I think that he's probably gone to the top of the list. You know, he's an attractive option if you're looking at if Scott Strickland, the Florida AD, is looking for somebody. You know, he's got roots in the SEC. He was with Nick Saban's staff. So he's familiar with what needs to be done, you know, to win at the SEC level. And he's a strong recruiter. So he kind of checks some of the boxes, I guess, if you're Scott Strickland, you're looking for. And he's a popular name. I think what's going to be interesting is does Florida get into a bidding war with LSU on Billy Napier? Because at some point, you know, LSU right now is looking around and their top candidates, their top guys are starting to sign big contracts elsewhere. Or extensions to stay at their schools. So you start to wonder, has Billy Napier become one of those such a hot commodity that you get into like a bidding war with another school? And again, I'm not sure if that's what Scott wants to do in it. And if not, you know, I'm sure there's some other options out there he might look at.
And I know you're not a financial guy, but I mean, how much do you think Florida is willing to pay for a head coach? Specifically, how much do you think Florida would be willing to pay for a group of five head coach to come and coach the Gators?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I mean, it's not like LSU or Florida, both, you know, with the SEC money, have to worry so much about that. But I don't think we're talking Nick Saban money. We're not talking, you know, anywhere in the $8.5-9 million range right off the bat. I don't think that's where you want to go for a guy who is, like you said, a group of five coach who hasn't had really Power Five experience as a head coach. You know, do you spend that kind of money? You probably not. You know, I mean, you're probably looking more in the $5.5 to $6 million range. So that's going to be, you know, that's going to be tough. You know, if LSU is locked in on him, or another school, let's say, is locked in on Billy Napier, and it starts to become some sort of bidding war, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if that happens. And again, Napier's name, there's nothing we have nothing definitive or anything that says that he appears to be one of the top guys out there. You know, another name to look at is a guy like Luke Fickell, you know, who's done a great job at Cincinnati, and he falls in that same sort of parameters as you're just asking about. He's a group of five coach. You know, what are you going to – how much money do you throw at a guy who's a group of five coach? Normally you're not going to pay the top dollar, but you're at least going to make him enough to make an attractive offer to be able to make him worth his effort to come down and want to coach in the program.
Matt, I'm of the mind, and I'm sure you're going to agree with me on this, that what's going to happen in the next 72 hours is just going to be a whirlwind. We're going to get a lot of announcements after the regular season has been completed. We have a better sense of who's probably going to the playoffs, so on and so forth. And I think coaches that are already coaching, they're not afraid to leave their bowl games if they're not in the playoffs. That being said, we've already seen James Franklin get an extension. We've seen Mel Tucker get an extension. I expect to hear more over the next few days. Given the way the market is stacking up, given the good jobs that are open, is this the year of years for a group of five coaches to make the jump up to the Power Five?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, you look around, and you know, it was funny. You look at like a month ago, you know, we were talking about coaching, you know, candidates out there, and you mentioned James Franklin. You know, you look at a guy like Mel Tucker. Those were the top two guys. Those guys whose names were being thrown about for the USC job, the LSU job. You know, you look at Virginia Tech job opening up. So you had all these kind of high-profile candidates. And now those guys have kind of signed these deals, and you start looking around and saying, okay, who's the next best option? You know, who best fits what you're trying to do? And it's going to be interesting because I think there are going to be some coaches out there that are going to get some opportunities. You know, we mentioned Luke Fickell. Matt Campbell is not a group of five, but he's a guy that's a kind of a lower tier power five, a coach who might get an opportunity. Jay Norvell at Nevada might be a guy you could see. His name's been thrown around for the Washington State job. We know Sonny Dykes is at SMU. It appears that he's kind of locked in on that TCU job. Jamie Chadwell, you know, who's a Coastal Carolina coach who's been mentioned, you know, I know for the Virginia Tech job. So there are going to be some names out there that are group of five guys who are probably some of the premier group of five coaches who are going to make that step up and get to a power five job. So it's going to be an attractive option for a lot of schools. But I think group of five, power five, I think it all comes down to, you know, who best fits what you want your program to be. Who do you feel like is going to take your program to the next level? There are a lot of great coaches who are at smaller schools who've done great things and can do bigger things when they get to a power five school. It's just the moniker that kind of has changed.
You know, Matt, that's interesting you mentioned that. It's who do you want, what do you want to represent your program? And that being said, maybe we don't speak enough. Maybe you and I do as journalists, but not the, you know, normal fan. We don't speak enough about athletic director hires. Maybe we need to start focusing more on that. Let's talk about the AD carousel once in a while.
Yeah, very, very true. And I think for an athletic director, you know, there are different types of athletic directors. So the ones who come in, and their job is they're the financial guy. They're the one who's out there raising money. They're the one who's out there trying to get, you know, the really work with the boosters and donors. And then there are those athletic directors who come in and understand, okay, I need to find a guy who is going to hit, you know, who's going to hit all the boxes we need. You know, he's going to be a guy who's going to come in and he's going to establish himself, and the program's going to be successful, and he's well liked by the fan base, and he's well liked by, you know, the boosters and donors. And that's you know, what you have to have to look at. And I think that's important. And because we've seen over the years, obviously, a lot of bad hires. You know, when an athletic director thinks he's getting maybe he goes after a prize name. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily work out well for what's going on. I'm sure Pat Chun is probably, you know, at Washington State was pulling his hair out with what happened with Nick Rolovich. I mean, you know, you think you've got a good hire, and then look what happens, you know, with everything that happened with the pandemic. So, again, it all comes down to making sure you have the right guy who fits what you're trying to do and establish and works well with you and works well within the program.
Joined by Matt Mershall, Orlando Sentinel. Follow him on Twitter at OS Matt Mershall. And Matt, one of the things we've been monitoring here in the heart of the SEC is the status of Brian Harsin at Auburn. I know they have that December 8th deadline, I believe, for him to provide evidence for him to be vaccinated. Have you heard anything else there? And if he doesn't do it, does Auburn have no recourse but to fire him?
Yeah, I mean, and that's true. If you know, if he comes down to it, and you have not followed the procedures, I mean, you know, it's unfortunate, but it's part of the terms of what's going on. You know, schools are kind of, it's not like this is a decision made by an athletic director who's just being saying, you know, I want this to happen. It's about, you know, the higher up. It's about the state board of trustees when it comes to that, school bus board of trustees. And when that happens, then it's out of your hands. That's essentially what happened with Washington State and Nick Rolovich. You know, it wasn't Pat Chun saying, I just want this to happen. You know, it was they had to follow state procedures, state laws. And, you know, if you're not willing to do that, then, you know, you saw what happened there. I'm not sure if Brian Harsin, I have no, you know, I don't have any inkling whether or not he's been very guarded about that, you know, telling everyone what's going on there. Unless he's already told the school, yes, I am vaccinated, and they're not worried about it. But you would think at some point if that comes down and you're not willing to do that, then you know you've got to imagine the school's going to have to make a decision, and if they follow through with it, it's going to be interesting. I mean, listen, if he ends up losing that job because of that, I mean, think about what that means. I mean, this is a program that has, you know, looked like it was doing well, had some success early on, struggled a little bit now, it's kind of tailored off. Bo Nix goes down with an injury, so you got to wonder, you know, is this, you know, what, where do you go from there? So a decision I'm sure, you know, Auburn is not really looking forward to having happen, but something they have to deal with. It's part of what was life.
And think about it, Matt, the already crazy amount of good openings in college football would just add one more. I mean, those people at Auburn, they're not afraid to stroke big checks. You've got those, what's the one super booster, Bobby Lauder? I mean, you got that guy lurking around. He'll stroke a check in a heartbeat to get the guy he wants.
Yeah, and look what happened with Gus Malzahn. I mean, listen, they gave Gus Malzahn a ton of money to get rid of him. You know, I mean, he got, I think it was over $21 million to get rid of Gus Malzahn. And Gus was happy then to get a job at UCF and have that money. You know, so, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's after a while, these are decisions. I talk about this all the time about when ADs decide to fire coaches maybe a little too soon. These are decisions that have long-term implications because they're financial implications, and they can really cripple your program for a while. If you've already struggled, listen, we're just a year coming off the pandemic, and you've had to, and most schools dealt with harsh economic restrictions because of the pandemic, and they had to do a lot of belt tightening. And now you're going to tell me now you're going to pull out another $12, $15, $20 million, whatever it is, to get rid of the coach and staff and everything like that. That's just – it really puts you behind the eight ball for a long period of time, and that can really kind of hamper what you're trying to do. So for some of these schools, you know, when you make a decision, you got to make sure it's the right decision, because if you're just doing it based on fan outrage on Twitter, you're going to have a painful – it's going to be a painful growing process over the next couple of years with the financial implications.
You know, and in closing, let's go down that path for a moment, Matt. Do you think the pandemic is what really expedited the recent round of conference realignment? Do you think you know, these teams are thinking, you know what, we have to do things to reinforce our revenue to make sure we have money coming in. We can get more by going to this conference. We can get more by going to that conference in case, God forbid, something else occurs.
Oh, yeah, I think I had something. I don't know if it was the definitive factor, but, I mean, I think when Texas and Oklahoma made their decision to go to, you know, SEC, it really did cause a domino effect. And I think you started some conferences looking around saying, okay, you know, if you know, we have an opportunity to go somewhere and make more money and help, you know, provide our athletic department with a better opportunity, you know, better exposure, depending on what those current deals are. I think that's what a lot of these schools do, especially those that are the Group of Five schools that were at the Conference USA level, maybe the Sun Belt level. You know, schools that were maybe lucky to make $1 million a year on their TV, you know, revenue rights, now all of a sudden they're looking at getting, you know, maybe triple that at times, or, you know, it really got themselves locked into a good spot where, look at the American. The American's got a 12-year deal. They're in the second year of their 12-year deal. Who wouldn't want to go to sign with a conference where you've got stability for the next 12 years? You know what I mean? You know, whereas some of these conferences may not have that. They only have a year left in their deals with ESPN or Fox or whoever. So, you know, you want to be able to lock yourself in a position where you're going to be out there. Nothing against Conference USA, but when Conference USA has got TV deals and they still have to work with Facebook and they're streaming some of their games on Facebook, I mean, if I'm looking around and I'm looking at the American and I've got a chance to be on national TV, maybe – 4 or 5 times during the year, yeah, I'm going to take that deal because you want to be out there and out front, and that's going to help, you know, sell tickets and do all that. So it had a big part of it, I'm sure, but it also was because the landscape is just changing, and we're seeing things kind of shift around right now.
Incredible insight from Matt Mercial, Orlando Sentinel. Follow him on Twitter at @OSMattMercial. Matt, buddy, you're one of the best in the business. Appreciate you coming on this morning.
All right, thanks a lot, guys. You take care.
All righty, buddy, thanks. It's Matt Mercial, the Orlando Sentinel.